Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And many stories that we'll be looking at with our experts this morning, including Vladimir Putin, an arrest warrant issued by the ICC, the International Criminal Court, that came out on Friday. James Comer, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, going deeper into the investigation of the Biden family financial dealings. Also this morning, the Russian takedown of that American drone over the Black Sea. More action up on Capitol Hill when it comes to the investigation into the southern border and the chaos at the southern border. And those are just some of the stories we'll be looking at this morning. We'll be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, KT McFarland, Cheryl Atkinson of Full Measure, of course, Jim Trusty, our legal expert, John Gizzi, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, and also Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times. So a lot going on. And the late news yesterday involves Vladimir Putin, the International Criminal Court, issuing an arrest warrant for the Russian president. The charges are focused on some of the very disturbing crimes of the Russian invasion. Thousands of Ukrainian children who were kidnapped and transported into Russia. This is Volodymyr Zelensky, through a CNN translator, explaining the charges from his standpoint.
This is a historic decision that will lead to historic responsibility. More than 16,000 cases of forced deportation of Ukrainian children by the occupier have already been recorded. But the real, full number of deportees may be much higher. Such a criminal operation would have been impossible without the order of the highest leader of the terrorist state.
In addition, the ICC issued an arrest warrant under the same charges for Maria Lvova-Belova, who is Putin's commissioner for children's rights. She is believed to be in charge of those programs involving children. The announcement following a report from the United Nations Human Rights Council on Thursday, which found that Russia has committed war crimes, including forcibly moving children. President Biden reacted to it yesterday at the White House.
Well, I think it justified it, but the question is, it's not recognized internationally by us either, but I think it makes a very strong point.
That's President Biden, of course, yesterday, just prior to boarding the helicopter to depart Washington. James Comer, the head of the House Oversight Committee, has been talking a lot about the Biden family investigation. He made a revelation on Thursday, so we want to go back to Thursday and let him explain it. And then there was some more information released from James Comer late last night, so we'll have that for you in a moment. But this is what he said on Thursday.
They've tried to imply that there was only a couple of family members, but what we found is there are multiple family members, and there's going to end up being between 4 and 7 Bidens who received significant amounts of money from communist China. We're going to subpoena more bank records. We're going to do everything in our ability to follow every bank trail. There was a lot of money that transferred from China to the Bidens. And what we want to know is, what did China get in return? Because I don't think China would spend this much money on this many different members of the Biden family if they weren't getting a return on their investment.
So that's James Comer, the House Oversight Committee chairman. Now, President Biden was asked about this, and where the irony comes in is this is President Biden's response when he was asked a question about it. But as you have heard, James Comer has actual banking records that name 3 Bidens receiving transfers, and the president responding, and here's what the president said.
Hunter Biden's business associates sent over $1 million to 3 of their family members. Any reaction to that report?
It's not true.
So President Biden denying it yesterday when it's pretty much in black and white from the bank records. So we'll see where that goes with the media and how aggressively they pursue the president on that. Now, here's how James Comer reacted when he was asked about President Biden's comments.
Well, the president must just read the Washington Post and watch MSNBC because they didn't cover this, but just about every other network in the world did. And we have bank records to prove that at least three, if not four, of his family members received a direct payment from a European, from a Chinese entity that was directly linked to the Chinese Communist Party. Now, the lawyers came out today and admitted that. But they said that the Biden family used it for seed capital for an energy venture. Now, we're going to bring Rob Walker in to talk to the committee and see if he can verify that, because what it looks like to us is they took the money and stuck it in their pocket.
So that's James Comer, and I've got a couple of more clips from Comer, and you may say, well, why are you playing all this Comer stuff? Because there's other things you could talk about in the news. Well, part of the reason I'm doing this is that you won't hear the full Comer clips anywhere else unless you're catching the Fox News channel or you're catching a WMAL or another conservative radio station, because you typically will not hear the mainstream media covering this story. There was nothing about it in the first 20 or 25 minutes on CNN that I checked out earlier this morning. So you're not hearing this stuff elsewhere, and it's very important information. And again, this is based on banking records. This is not hearsay and some of the other allegations that float around on there. This is based on banking records. And here's more of what James Comer had to say.
They've continuously changed their story. Just a few months ago, when I announced the investigation after the House flipped, they said there was nothing to the laptop, that it was complete Russian disinformation. So they've denied the existence of these payments directly to the Biden family all the way until the day that we actually produced bank records. I don't think the White House ever thought that I would get my hands on those bank records. And I've got some bad news for the White House. This is just the beginning.
And there's one more. You're going to hear about Rob Walker, and he was one of the people involved in the bank transfers. And here's the explanation that James Comer does with his role.
He's a person of interest because we have his bank records. We answered a lot of questions, and the first question was the president being truthful when he said his family never took money from companies directly linked to the CCP? We know the answer is yes, they did, and the president was not being truthful. So we have a lot of questions about what did the Bidens do to deserve over $1 million from a Chinese energy company? I mean, what did they bring to the table? I assume that China wanted a return on that investment. Was that something that Joe Biden did as vice president? Was that something that they thought Joe Biden could do in the private sector? Or was it because of Hunter Biden and Jim Biden and Hunter Biden's girlfriend at the time's experience in energy? They had no experience in energy. So we have a lot of questions, and it's of the utmost concern because this is an issue of national security. If China has something on the Biden, then I think the American people need to know that. This deal was set up during 2015 and 2016 when Joe Biden was squarely seated in the office of vice president.
We will be hearing a lot more about this in the days and weeks to come. It is 6:18. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Mike Franciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Maryland, still a lot of heavy traffic southbound Baltimore-Washington Parkway past 197, the accident blocking the left lane. And as you approach the 197 interchange, some very heavy traffic. No issues on the northbound lanes of the parkway, Interstate 95. No reports of any travel lanes blocked. Looking good on the Beltway in Maryland as well as Virginia. Northbound 395 Edsel Road, that earlier crash, has been cleared from the roadway. Interstate 66 from Haymarket to the Roslyn Tunnel, wide open. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
We're looking for sunshine today with a high of 54. Overnight lows will be 26 degrees tonight. Then we're back with more sunshine on Sunday with a high of 42. Monday looks sunny with a high of 53. Tuesday will be up to 62. Some clouds in the picture for Wednesday. The highs again in the low 60s. 38 degrees in the nation's capital. 6:19 on the Saturday Morning Update. Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and during the week, you may have heard more about the southern border. There was a congressional hearing at the southern border, but no Democrats came down. There were some that had planned to come down, but I guess they finally got the memo that told them not to go. That's my assumption, because actually, one of the Democrats had called a witness, but the Democrat didn't show up. It got a little testy, and some revelations from Raul Ortiz, who is the chief of the Border Patrol. This is some of the back and forth with the Congressional Committee. Congressman Green interviewing Raul Ortiz.
Chief Ortiz, do you think that Secretary Mayorkas is lying there?
About 10 years ago, we used operational control as a measuring stick of our effectiveness along the southwest border. My new strategy is geared towards mission advantage.
So you know I'm asking a very specific question.
Yes, sir.
And you're kind of describing how the goalpost has been moved because of the mass waves of people that are coming.
And Congressman Dale Strong is a new member of Congress. He's been in since January. He was very vocal on his feelings about the lack of Democratic participation in that hearing.
I'm a freshman United States Congressman. I've been in office for 9 weeks, and we're learning more here than we've heard in the last 9 weeks. I thank each of you, but I can tell you this. The thing I'm most distraught about, there's not a Democrat here. This is an American issue. It's appalling that the Democrats didn't show up, and America is under attack.
So that's just some sense of the frustration that the Republicans have been feeling in this lack of attention to the border and Secretary Mayorkas' failures. There was another kidnapping in Mexico last night of a grandmother and grandchild. That happened late yesterday, and the United States authorities are involved in trying to find them at this point. Continuing problems on the southern border. It's 6:24. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And a reminder that coming up, we've got K.T. McFarland, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We'll be talking with Jennifer Harper from The Washington Times, Jim Trustee, and Cheryl Atkinson, along with John Gizzi from Newsmax. Stay with us on the Saturday Morning Update. Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and I want to go back to midweek. Of course, we heard about the Russian shootdown of a U.S. drone. It was not really shot out of the sky, but it was taken out by Russian fighters. And the frustration that I was talking about with the Republicans, I just wanted to play a little of this response from the Republicans on this. First off, this is John Kirby, of course, and he's White House Communications. John Kirby explaining the U.S. response, and this was on Wednesday.
They need to be more careful flying in international airspace near U.S. assets that are, again, flying in completely legal ways, conducting missions in support of our national security interests. They're the ones that need to be more careful. The Black Sea doesn't belong to Russia. It belongs to many countries. And the United States has been operating there on the sea and in the air, and we're going to continue to operate, again, in complete accordance with international law.
So the Russians take down a $32 million drone, and our response is, you need to be more careful. I've gotten a stiffer fine and penalty for running a red light or going 10 miles over the speed limit. I don't know how that made you feel, but here's how it made Mike Rounds feel. He is a U.S. Republican senator.
Pissed off. I mean, let's just be honest about this for a second. The report coming out of our government is that this was an unprofessional act and environmentally unsound. I'm sorry, folks. They shot down a United States warplane. They took it out of action. And that's the response we get back. So, yeah, not very happy about it. And the bottom line is we cannot allow that to happen. You do not take out aircraft. That is something that is absolutely a violation of international norms, if nothing else. But in this particular case, more has to come.
That's Mike Rounds. And Mike Turner is the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He had this response.
really it shows the pattern of Russia aggressiveness, both to drones themselves, as you've seen here, but also even manned aircraft, both British, the air policing that's happening up in the Baltics by Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, continuous intercepts by Russian fighter planes that are very aggressive and are very dangerous.
So that's a sense of the Republican frustration with the administration on that topic. 6:29, this is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up next, we'll talk with Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times. 6:30 on the Saturday Morning Update. Mike Bronciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Starting in Maryland, southbound BW Parkway, as you move past 197, it looks like they have cleared that crash and all travel lanes are open. It looks like those delays have eased up. No issues on Interstate 95. Beltway in Maryland moves well. No reports of any issues along the I-270 corridor. Route 50 between the Capitol Beltway and Bay Bridge looking good. No issues on the Beltway in Virginia. 395 Interstate 95 between Springfield and Fredericksburg moving at speed. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Cooler and breezy for your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 50s this afternoon. Wind gusts up to around 20 miles per hour. And then tomorrow we're tracking cold temperatures. Cold alert for us here at 7 News with a hard freeze to start. Temperatures at 28 degrees. The coldest they've been since February 18th. Rebound highs only into the low 40s with breezy northwest winds. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans and the First Alert Weather Center.
38 degrees in the nation's capital. 6:31 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is a Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us every week. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning, and I hope you've recovered from St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, well, good morning, Rick. I'm pretty good.
Well, I'm not sure if we're ever going to recover from the Biden budget between interest rates and inflation. And there's been some research on that Biden budget. What you got?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's have a round of applause, please, for the Republican National Committee, which came up with an analysis of the $6.9 trillion budget, so we don't have to. I did a little research on their analysis, and here's just a couple of things that they discovered about this $6.9 trillion budget. And here we go. What's actually in there? And it appears, Rick, that this is a very curated kind of a budget. It's got certain issues and certain activities. And here's what the Republican National Committee has to say. They say Biden's budget focuses on advancing equity and environmental justice, mentioning equity 63 times. Climate is mentioned 148 times, and environmental justice is mentioned 25 times. Meanwhile, inflation, Rick, which we all care about, is only mentioned 10 times, our police 4 times, parents were mentioned 3 times, gas prices 3 times, and fentanyl 2 times. And for the third year in a row, under Mr. Biden, the budget does not include the Hyde Amendment and would use taxpayer money to fund abortions, a policy that a majority of Americans oppose. That's according, again, to the Republican National Committee in their very handy analysis. They also say the budget includes funding for a civilian climate corps, whatever the heck that is, a demand pushed by far-left environmentalists like the Sunrise Movement, which would pay young Americans to advocate for environmental justice. And Biden's budget would also increase funding for the IRS by 15%. This comes on top of the $80 billion that Democrats gave the agency last year. Again, I repeat, this is coming from the Republican National Committee. And sort of last but not least, the Biden's budget also includes other far-left priorities, $3 billion to advance gender equity and equality, $150 million for illegal immigrants' legal fees. I repeat, $150 million for their legal fees. $57 million to support the UN Population Fund, which supports abortion and forced sterilization in China, according to the RNC. That's your budget update for now. And hats off to the committee because they put out about 5 of these analyses trying to explain the enormity of the $6.9 trillion budget.
You know, for decades, television and radio broadcast outlets have fought for the audience size and the worry about the ratings. But you've got some interesting stats that I think will surprise everybody here.
Yes, I do. It always surprises me. There are some agencies within the federal government that do a lot of pretty remarkable things. And let's look at the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And this is the federal agency which, in their stable of incredibly talented things, the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe are among the six very kind of significant media entities that they harbor there. And they announced this week that those networks, Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, they reached a record weekly audience of 410 million people in 2022. 410 million people. That's huge. Anyway, this is what the agency itself said. It said, chief among the agency's concerns are the information manipulation and media suppression tactics emanating from authoritarian governments in China, Russia, Iran, and others who strive to undermine American values and incite political, economic, and humanitarian crises around the world. That's, again, according to the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And in the pocketbook department, they're doing pretty well. They're going to get $944 million this year in order to, quote, fund critical international broadcasting efforts. And one of those efforts, Rick, is kind of interesting. This is something called Current Time. This is a 24/7 Russian language television and digital network launched way back in 2017 to give news, public debate, fact-based reportings on all that kind of stuff of interest to people in Russia and also other countries in Central and Eastern Europe. So they're still getting the word out there that maybe a lot of folks aren't hearing. The network is produced by Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty in cooperation with the Voice of America. And, Rick, it is also amazingly popular. They put out online videos, and they're meant for everyone to see. Here's their stats. They say, since the war began in February 2022, Current Time's online videos have been viewed an unprecedented 4 billion times. That's a billion, not a million. And the point of all this, Rick, is just to emphasize these are global media entities that truly are global, and they are getting the word out. And if you're curious about the U.S. Agency for Global Media, you can find them at usagm.gov. And Voice of America always has a lot of pretty significant news coverage there, voanews.com. So that's your global report for today, Rick.
So many of the polls are focused on politics and how you feel about different candidates and issues, but you have some interesting stats from an Associated Press poll that may be hitting a little closer to home for all of us.
Yeah, I think so. And the title of this poll tells all, and it's called, What Are You Worried About? And this is an Associated Press poll of 1,247 U.S. adults released on March the 7th. If you're fearful and weirded out these days, you're not alone. Here we go with the numbers. 67% of U.S. adults are extremely or very concerned that misinformation poses a direct threat to the United States. 61% are concerned that cyber attacks pose a direct threat to the U.S. 53% are concerned that Russia's influence around the world poses a direct threat. 51% are concerned that North Korea's nuclear program poses a direct threat. 50% are concerned that the spread of infectious diseases poses a threat. 47% are concerned that Iran's nuclear program poses a direct threat. And last but certainly not least, 41% are concerned that illegal immigration poses a direct threat to the United States. So, again, that's an Associated Press poll. And if you're worried, well, it's kind of a normal thing right now, so you're not alone.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Library in Simi Valley is a destination. If you have not visited the museum, you must. It's amazing. Well, the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute has a new president.
Yes, indeed, and you're 100% right about that being an incredible site. Folks go there and love it. It's out there in Simi Valley, California. But anyway, the official Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, that's their formal name out there, but they have a brand new leader. And this is David V. Trullio will become the president and CEO on April the 3rd. This is according to Frederick J. Ryan, Jr. He is chairman of the board of trustees of the foundation itself. And Mr. Trullio, incoming president and CEO, he says, Ronald Reagan is the greatest president of the 20th century. Especially in challenging times, one cannot overstate the importance to America and the world of securing and advancing Ronald Reagan's legacy, his timeless principles, and his elevating leadership example. Nice quote there, I thought. And his domain is pretty large. It's the Reagan Presidential Library and Museum, which you're referring to, the Reagan Center for Public Affairs, the Presidential Learning Center, the Air Force One Pavilion, the Discovery Center, and the Reagan Institute, which is right here in D.C. That carries out the foundation's mission in the nation's capital. And if you're curious about Mr. Trullio, he's got an interesting background. He is the former managing editor, head of strategy and editorial operation at Fox News Digital. That's their online outreach. And this is, again, we were talking previously about very large audiences. And Fox News Digital last year in 2022, they averaged 82.7 million monthly visitors to their website and other related online entities. So he has an interesting background. This is someone who understands how to actually get the word out in a very, very dynamic way, and also probably reach out to younger audiences. And he's going to be, Mr. Trullio will succeed John Hubisch. He is retiring. He has been there since 2009. And here's their final comment. The Reagan Foundation and Institute is an essential research, not just for Americans, but for people around the world who want to learn from one of the greatest leaders of the last century. And if you're curious, just go to ReaganFoundation.org. So it was fun to go there and see what they're up to.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. 6:42, the Saturday morning update. Jim Trusty up next. But first, Mike Franciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Got a lot of heavy traffic along the Beltway, Maryland, the outer loop as you approach Cuttleworth Avenue. Two left lanes are blocked with the issue there. A little bit of slow traffic as you make your way through Greenbelt on the outer loop of the Beltway. No issues on the Beltway in Montgomery County. Looking good along the I-270 corridor. Traveling between the Beltways, take your pick. Both 95 and the Parkway doing well. No reports of any issues in Virginia. All the major interstates at this time moving well. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cooler and breezy for your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 50s this afternoon. Wind gusts up to around 20 miles per hour. And then tomorrow we're tracking cold temperatures. Cold alert for us here at 7 News with a hard freeze to start. Temperatures at 28 degrees. The coldest they've been since February 18th. Rebound highs only into the low 40s with breezy northwest winds. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
38 degrees in the nation's capital. 6:43 on the Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us. He is a member of the Trump legal team and a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Jim, there are stories in the news about the Mar-a-Lago investigation, but they're typically not attributed to any named sources. Any updates for us?
Yeah, nothing that we can talk about. It's a very frustrating situation. I think it took about 25 minutes for a sealed order that was issued yesterday to make its way to CNN and for all sorts of really one-sided commentary about these proceedings. But the bottom line is, even if the other side, in this case the government, seems to be leaking quite regularly, it really doesn't change the ethics for where I sit. So we have to kind of sit back and accept the handcuffs of sealed proceedings and not fire back, even though it's very, very frustrating to see.
Well, there was news on the Alec Baldwin front, and the prosecutor is stepping down. Help us understand that.
Yeah, this case is really descending into chaos, and chaos is not usually a friend of the prosecutor. So, you know, we talked last week about how there was a motion filed by Baldwin's attorneys challenging the enhancement charge for using a firearm in connection with a manslaughter, and that was heading towards a motions hearing, which is what typically happens. The prosecutors made all sorts of kind of snarky comments to the press about fancy lawyers for big Hollywood types, but then they turn around and dismiss the charges. They conceded that the motion was correct and didn't even let it get to the judge. Well, the next motion that was going to be dealt with was a challenge to the role of Andrea Reeb, who is the special prosecutor who teamed up with the local New Mexico prosecutor on this case. Since Reeb had been appointed special counsel, she also won a New Mexico legislative race and had been elected into a position that had to deal with things like budgeting for this prosecution. So she found herself in an awkward position of recusing herself with her representative hat while still serving as a special prosecutor. Well, in any event, there was a pretty innovative motion filed by Baldwin's team challenging her ability to hold two posts. And once again, the prosecution fired back publicly and said, this is imaginative, but it's an unsupported theory. They wrote that on March 6th. There was a hearing on this motion to disqualify Reeb set for March 27th. And again, the prosecutors folded. Reeb just stepped down as special prosecutor, leaving the other partner on the case. She issued a statement about this prosecution saying that her first priority is to serve the community by way of the justice for the victim. But she's made a very interesting comment that, again, bothers me in terms of how these prosecutors are making public pronouncements of guilt. And I'm not exactly rooting for Alec Baldwin as a person, but I don't like this trend that we see in New York and now in New Mexico of prosecutors basically making statements of guilt. So what Reeb said in her step-down speech was, it has become clear that the best way I can ensure justice is served in this case is to step down so that the prosecution can focus on the evidence and the facts. That would all be fine. But she goes on to say, which clearly show a complete disregard for basic safety protocols led to the death of Helena Hutchins. So it's really kind of an astounding phenomena in my mind. Again, she might ultimately be right that, in fact, Mr. Baldwin is guilty of manslaughter. But these public pronouncements are really getting kind of out of control. You can imagine I have real concerns about that when it comes to Donald Trump's prosecutions or potential prosecutions. But here we are in New Mexico seeing the same kind of mentality of announcing guilt even as they're walking out the door of handling the case. So, again, everything seems to be breaking the way of Baldwin so far. That won't change the basic facts. And we have a preliminary hearing coming up within a couple of weeks. It'll be very interesting. But a lot of chaos on the prosecution side of the desk right now.
Well, with the verdict and the sentencing in the Alex Murdaugh trial, we figured that one would be out of the news at this point. But a development this week that involved a death in 2015 is related to the Murdaugh case. And there's a major move in that case.
Yeah, there is. We talked about this last week to a degree, but there's an update. You know, we talked about how there was a young man, a classmate of Buster Murdaugh, the redheaded child of Alex Murdaugh, who got some notoriety in court by using his middle finger during testimony he didn't like. Well, Stephen Smith was found dead on a country road not far from the Murdaugh home. And there have been questions about that 2015 death that was attributed to a hit-and-run automobile collision. There's always been some open questions, including a really strange fact that, you know, your listeners may not be used to hearing about, which is in most circumstances where a vehicle strikes a person outside of a vehicle, a pedestrian, the force of the impact is so significant that the person's shoes come off. They're literally knocked out of their shoes. It's a very common component of high-speed collisions between a vehicle and a pedestrian. Mr. Smith's shoes were on. He had no accompanying injury other than trauma to his head. There was no broken glass, no skid marks, no anything that really corroborated the notion that this was a random fatal hit-and-run accident. What we don't know from the police still is how it is that they're tying any of this, or at least trying to tie any of this, to Buster Murdaugh. But they did say publicly that they found some new evidence about Mr. Smith's death. And so that led to the family of Mr. Smith coming up with a GoFundMe page saying, you know, we would really appreciate the help of raising enough money to have an independent autopsy after an exhumation of his grave. And they were looking to raise about $15,000, and most estimates were it was going to cost somewhere around $10,000 or $15,000. To get a medical examiner to come on board, to do an autopsy, to do the exhumation. They raised about $45,000. There's a lot of public support, or maybe even lack of support, for the Murdaugh family. And what they've done is announced this week that they're, in fact, going to go down that road of having an exhumation and an independent autopsy, and they're going to look into this and see if there's physical evidence or forensic evidence that might tie into whatever else they have to try to put yet another suspicious death on the family of Alex Murdaugh. You know, there was one thing I noted, Rick, that was really kind of intriguing. You know, we talked a while back about Alex's feigned car breakdown. Remember, there was a story about him driving to Charleston. The car broke down, and some stranger in a pickup truck just attacked him and shot him. And it turns out it was an insurance fraud scheme where he was going to basically create his own death and let the family benefit. Well, it's interesting in the Smith case that factually one of the things that happened is they found Mr. Smith's car about 3 miles away from the scene. His wallet was still in there. His gas cap was unscrewed. And state police kind of jumped to the conclusion that he had had car trouble and was looking for help when he got hit by the car. And just a little part of me wonders about the serendipity of Alex creating a story about a car breakdown and Stephen Smith's story also being associated with a car breakdown. I mean, maybe that's just a coincidence, but there might be something there that they're looking at in terms of, you know, how that becomes the story in these deaths, or at least the attempted death for Alex in one incident. The other thing I would just mention is, you know, local prosecutors can develop very powerful relationships with the forensic community, with medical examiners, with expert witnesses, with law enforcement. And I find it interesting that, you know, Alex Murdaugh was in a very powerful position. His family, kind of iconic. They had run the solicitor's office for many, many years in the Low Country area of South Carolina. And it's interesting to me that, you know, there could be something going on there where Alex Murdaugh intervened in some fashion, and I'm not saying there's evidence of this, but I'm sure they're looking. Did he intervene to make sure there was not an autopsy? And we went down that road with the housekeeper not having an autopsy at first. So lots of weird little things that I'm sure investigators are looking hard at, but the big headline is not my kind of idle speculation. The big headline is there is going to be an exhumation, an autopsy of 19-year-old Stephen Smith, and stay tuned.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. As always, Jim, thank you very much, and you can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Rick. Have a good weekend.
You too. It is 6:53 on the Saturday morning update, and coming up, we'll be talking with John Gizzi, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, Cheryl Atkinson on the way from Full Measure, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland, all coming up on the Saturday morning update. We'll be hitting some of the top stories of the morning, including that arrest warrant that has been issued for Vladimir Putin and the very latest on Ukraine. So stay with us. Saturday morning update continues. We've heard a lot about the bailout of the Silicon Valley Bank and some of the depositors there. Interesting note, California Governor Gavin Newsom reportedly had substantial personal ties to Silicon Valley Bank. Reports linked Newsom to the bank through personal accounts, three wineries, and his wife's charity. California law bans officials from influencing decisions in which they have a financial interest. This is from a report at Business Insider and a report from Ken Klippenstein of The Intercept. California governor lobbied the White House and the Department of the Treasury about the pending bailout of Silicon Valley Bank. According to the reporting, Newsom's personal relationship with SVB went beyond the wineries. One anonymous former employee who handled Newsom's finances told Klippenstein that Newsom maintained personal accounts at SVB for years. And they bailed it out. 6:58, Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.